Hello, and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. We have a listener of the week, John Fullwider. He's new to Nonprofit Radio from when Dory Clark was on 2 weeks ago. He tweeted that he was binge listening to shows, and I love that. How to make him listener of the week. John is in Lincoln, Nebraska. He did a TEDx talk about his own infertility. He's a coach for nonprofit CEOs. On Twitter, you'll find him at John M. Fullwider with one L. Congratulations, John, listener of the week, and thank you very much for binge listening to Nonprofit Radio. I'm glad you're with me. I'd suffer retroperitoneal fibrosis if I came to learn that you had missed today's show. Your online approach plan. If you want reach and engage effectively online, you have to plan. What's the leadership's role? How do you get buy-in on the plan? What about those who stray from your agreed goals? Tulani Elisa is social media manager for 3Spot. Amanda Heidke is director of digital strategy for Hodges Consulting, where Dottie Hodges is president. And that was recorded at NTC, the Nonprofit Technology Conference, 2014. And IRS helps your marketing. Yeet Uchtum is a CPA with Wegner CPAs. He's got ideas for using your IRS Form 990 in your marketing. It does have a purpose. On Tony's Take Two, get off ALS's back, for Pete's sake. We're sponsored by Generosity Series, hosting multi-charity 5K runs and walks. Here is my interview on your online approach plan from NTC. Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio coverage of NTC, Nonprofit Technology Conference 2014. We're at the Marriott Hotel, the Marriott Wardman Hotel in Washington, D.C. And with me now are Tulani Elisa, Dottie Hodges, and Amanda Heidke. Tulani is social media manager for 3Spot. Dottie Hodges is president of Hodges Consulting. And Amanda Heidke is director of digital strategy at Hodges Consulting. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Well,
it's
a
pleasure to have all three of you.
Your
workshop topic is strategy is not a four-letter word, how setting a plan for your online approach reaps rewards. Tulani, you're closest to me. Let's start. What do you, at 3Spot, what do you think some of the shortcomings are that not necessarily at 3Spot, but that nonprofits generally are not strategic enough about? What should they be doing a little better, you think?
So at 3Spot, we design websites and make social media strategies, analytic strategies, and digital strategies for nonprofits, for NGOs, for government organizations. So that's what we deal with all the time. A lot of the time what happens is nonprofits think, oh, we need to do social. And then they don't think we should have an approach, we should make sure to go about it the right way, we should do some pre-planning. They just kind of want to get into the space because it's so fast-moving, fast-paced, and always changing. So a lot of what kind of we are going to be talking about at our panel is really, you know, how a digital strategy can play out in things like social media or website design or any kind of approach that you have online. So a lot of times it's the kind of leap without really knowing what's next, and so we want to talk about what you do before you leap.
Dottie, I imagine you see much the same thing at Hodges Consulting?
We do, and you know, I think Tulani's reference to what we call shiny object syndrome is one of the biggest players. Also, kind of the collective sense of, you know, we're looking at things from an organization's perspective, you know, our program work, our mission, how we're structured as an organization, the content we produce, but we find increasingly organizations need a little help in seeing it from sort of an outside perspective in terms of who are we trying to reach, who are our target audiences, what are they looking for, and then what do we want them to do? What are the engagement components that we want them to accomplish? And so having that sort of step back first really helps a productive strategy gain results in the end.
That shiny object syndrome you mentioned, what are some of those shiny objects that you see clients reaching for?
You name it. Twitter, blog, Reddit. I mean,
world-class,
it's just
world-class websites.
Anything.
Yeah. You know, we want this amazing website that does everything from soup to nuts, and really what they want to do is find out what that target audience is that will reach their mission will reach and do that thing, not try to be everybody's everything, not try to be the website that gets the program director's needs met, the
executive director's needs met, the needs of the membership services department, but rather figure out what the organization's mission is and how they can leverage that website or that social media project and use it to get that message out, which is what the audience wants, not necessarily what the organization thinks they need.
Oh, so we should be thinking about what our constituents and our and all in all their different varieties, what their needs are. Everybody's right. Nodding.
It's definitely really important for organizations to stop thinking like organizations and more like their constituents and thinking about what they want to hear and the people that are looking at their social media pages or their blog or their website and what really connects with them. And you can do that easily through doing audience research, through, you know, going through and seeing, you know, what posts and what content is really working and resonating with people, what are they engaging with, and what's not working, and how do we change that. And you can also really look at the landscape and look at your peers and say, okay, what are they doing that we're not doing that's working, you know? And it's so much of it is really, you know, taking what you see with your own stuff, taking what you see from people that have the, you know, the best in class work and saying, okay, this is working for them. How can we, you know, do that for our own selves?
Actually, it could even go so far as to be sharing their content that you see doing well. Let's give a shout out to our colleagues over at whatever the other organization is that for sharing this meme or, you know, whatever, right?
Exactly. I mean, it could be sharing content and using, you know, third-party content is always a good way to, you know, get people to show that you're a thought leader and to show that you're someone that really, you know, knows what's going on because you're observing other people in the space. And it's also a good way, you know, most people that are in design and art curation, you know, you're stealing from everywhere, you know, and then you're making that into something that works for you. And that's okay because what you're doing is kind of making showing that you understand what's happening because you're actually going back, creating your strategy and saying, oh, they did this. How can we work that into our goal of, you know, fundraising? How can we work that into our goal of awareness? So really, you know, yes, third-party content, but also really using those things for your own and making that your own as well to fit into your strategy.
Okay. All right. Dottie, how are we going to get started in being more strategic and invoking the S-bomb?
I'll tell you what it's not.
Okay,
first.
Start there. Okay.
It's not panic. It's not panic central. And I think a lot of organizations look at the different challenges or the different needs or perceived needs of the organization and have a little bit of that panic moment. How do we start? How do we begin to know what to do first, what tactic to pursue? And so our approach essentially is to say we're going to take a step back and look across the organization collectively, this is the key word, right, and agree upon what our goals and objectives are as an organization. Are our priorities to drive membership, which is okay. You know, let's agree that that's, call it what it is and agree that that's the case. Is it advocacy, direct actions, or some combination? And getting everyone collectively to head nod in the same direction about those goals and objectives to then say, okay, for that objective, let's look at our audiences and do the research Tulani's talking about to then roll out. And we can talk a little bit more the later stages. But I want to actually have Amanda talk a little bit about, you know, sort of getting those heads nodding in the right direction and how that happens and how that's the critical piece.
Okay. I know you're president of Hodges Consulting, but I'm the host of Tony Martin and Non-Profit Radio.
You do what you like.
And we are going to get to that because absolutely I want to deal with the how-tos. We don't want to only be at the theoretical level.
Right.
But I do want to ask you a question about leadership. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to get all these people seated around a table and ultimately, which could be a bit of a process, sounds like, but ultimately agreeing, we're going to have leadership buy into this process, no?
Absolutely. Leadership engagement is critical, and that might be at the executive director level. It might even be the board involvement in some cases, depending on how the organization works. But making sure that there's a team assembled, we call it a core team, that is generally a smaller group that has the authority and autonomy to drive the process. Because we want leadership engaged, but we also don't want leadership to get so involved in the granular pieces. Let's say we move forward with a website redesign, and we're talking about those very particular components. We want that core team to have the authority to move the project forward and then engage others in the organization as appropriate, you know, external audience research, whatever it is. But that engagement of the leadership of the organization is critical to move the project forward.
Okay.
And what's also important with leadership, a lot of times you'll see this at nonprofit, is really getting them to buy into that strategy, like you were saying. So having them understand, you know, this strategy is going to help us reach this goal. or this is, you know, this is what the ROI is going to be. This is the return on investment that we're going to get out of doing this, out of, you know, making our website better or having a blog or doing that kind of thing, and then showing them those results afterwards. So a really important part is to set metrics and to have analytics and to say, you know, we want to do this. We don't want to put out this picture just because it's a pretty picture of something. We want to do this because we know this picture is going to get a decent amount of shares, that's going to connect to more people, that's going to get us more donations. Okay. So really, like Dottie was saying, not being too granular, but showing them the bigger picture of, you know, here's what we can get out of this.
You know, and I would add, it's not even just getting their buy-in, but it's getting them to stay focused on what the goal of the project is, whether it's a website redesign or a social media campaign. Having served for 8 years as the director of online operations at Trout Unlimited, which is a large nonprofit that has chapters and councils all across the country, as well as a national office, and they all want to work in concert together and leverage digital media. Getting everyone in the room together to pick a few key goals and then to pursue a project with that premise, so that every decision that you make along the way happens with the vision of, these are the goals we're trying to meet. And when you're making a decision along the way, it has to meet that metric and that goal. Because it's very easy for nonprofits internally to have shiny object syndrome, but past that, to also change their mind midstream, mid-project, about what the goal of it is.
Very bad.
It's horrible, and it's rampant. I find that, having worked on the, you know, other side of the table, worked for a nonprofit for so long, it was very hard to keep everybody who needed to have that buy-in focused along the way as to what the end goal really is.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Bonjour, this is Dominique de Kock.
Bonjour, c'est Tamara Zuboff.
Bonjour, c'est Asania Kone.
We are hosting Pardon My French New York City.
Our guests come from all over the world.
From Mali to New Caledonia, from Paris to Quebec.
French is their common language, yet they all come from different cultures, backgrounds or countries.
And their common desire is to make New York their home.
Listen to them share their stories.
Join us at Pardon My French New York City every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Before we even get to what Dottie was urging that I turn to you for, and we will
suggesting.
It was an admonition. It was actually bordering on admonishing me. I that's how I took it. As long as we're talking about,
I am
perception.
A Leo.
Okay. my perception was not unbiased. So before we get to that, what do you do when the cats start to stray and different teams within the organization start to convert the goal and the work?
You know, I think converting the goal and the work actually is okay, as long as everyone is going to agree at the same time that the kitten, the herd of kittens is moving in another direction.
And it's all justifiable on an organizational basis across all departments, not just from our perspective in our department.
Absolutely.
So what do you do when somebody starts to stray?
Well, I love having the key mission, and I love having the metric decision. So one of my favorite components of any strategic task is to have the metrics by which you're going to gauge if it's being successful. And that does help keep the organization on task, because if you're all looking to get the same piece of data and the same result, what the result is from it, you can kind of keep people focused on heading down that path. The trick comes in when your goals aren't clear enough to have a metric to follow it up by. And so making sure that your goals are your tactics have very specific goals, and that the actions you're going to take to reach those goals are very well defined. And that's the strategy that a lot of nonprofits don't put their heads around what those tasks and components look like. And understanding what those are before you dive down into any project is critical to the success of that project.
Give me an example of what you just said. Take it from your own background a Hodges Consulting client, whichever you like.
Sure. So from my own background, Toronto Unlimited recently did a very large website redesign. And by large, I mean they scrapped the old site and started afresh. And perhaps the best example I have of that is the decision that was the website's goal going to be specific to growing the membership, or was the website's goal going to be specific to growing engagement, peer-to-peer engagement? And the goal changed throughout the life of the project. So as the website redesign was commencing, the goals went from, are we going to simply grow our membership, use this to drive increased donations through a membership drive, to, you know, really what we actually want to do is create this peer-to-peer network of people across the country who are engaged in our mission, and offer them a place to do that electronically, digitally, through a website. And so it was a subtle shift in focus. Now, ultimately, I believe the organization was right, because by creating that peer-to-peer network, you will, in fact, grow the membership. It's a different timeline. The tactics you would take to grow the membership, if that was simply your sole goal, are much different than the tactics you would take if your goal is to create a social network.
Yeah, right. And build up the peer-to-peer.
Right.
Yeah.
And you kind of also have to kind of not give credit, but understand that things in the digital, especially social media, but all digital space, are changing so much and so quickly, and people are doing so many different things, that situations where people lose track of what their goal was or what they were going towards can happen so quickly. You know, you see a competitor, you see someone that, you know, your organization admires, and they're doing something that wasn't in your strategy, and you're like, well, maybe we should be doing that, or maybe, you know, and everyone gets that, not just the pang of envy, but that pang of like, we're missing out, we should be doing this, we're behind. We're this. And that's what the digital space kind of makes you feel like. And so, as Amanda was saying, you know, when you're able to say, okay, we see this, we're taking it into account, how do we put that into our strategy? And also, how are we willing to herd these cats in this direction, so that it's saying, okay, we have to acknowledge that maybe this isn't something that we thought about from the beginning, but it's something that we can do and we can work with, because we still have that base, that strategy, you know, that the keywords, the ideas that we're following. Like
and I think being flexible, working within your, especially when nonprofits work within the different programs of their organization, to find ways to be tactical through a digital medium, it's okay to get off track a little bit if it meets a specific need and purpose along the way. And I think TU found that a lot of times, as we went through this 18-month project, that subtly shifting it, when you work with a program staff who has a very unique need, but it would fit in the metrics of the project, or working with the development team, so that their goals were met, even though fundraising wasn't perhaps the ultimate be-all, end-all, but that they still had a very viable program and they needed digital focus, but was fine.
And one more thing on the goals, too. When we talk about getting an organization to decide on priorities, the first thing we say is, it's okay. We're not saying we're not going to do these other things. But when we have to make decisions about, you know, the user experience, or prioritizing even projects against one another, you know, that we will let those overriding goals lead, that we will still be doing these other things. They're not going to be scrapped entirely. And the same with reaching different audiences when they do the prioritization.
Yeah. All right. So now, in my own good time, I'm going to And I'm going to turn now to Amanda. Dottie, no. I'm just giving you shit, Dottie. Nobody listens to this show anyway, so don't. No, that's not true. It's not. Thank you. Okay, Amanda. Now, maybe it's similar to what happens when people stray, but let's go to how we're going to create this process. We have the leadership that Dottie made clear is essential. How are we going to get all the different program, fundraising, finance and business, all the interests to agree? What is that process, Doctor? What's the start of that process?
Yeah, the start of that process is without a doubt having your technology lead on staff talk to the equivalent lead in every program area, whether it's development, major gifts, administrative, human resources, program. Every person needs a voice at the table. And I found the most effective way to do that is to get everyone in a room for a full day workshop. And you spend the day going through, it's really an airing of the grievances. It really truly is what it boils down to. Everyone needs a minute to talk about what the website's not doing for them and what it is doing for them, and to talk about what they want it to do. And when you start to do the airing of the grievances, I always imagined what would happen is it would just be a horrifying day. And it actually wasn't. It really put a spotlight on what some very specific areas of problem were digitally for the organization. And with Dottie's focus around how that day was constructed, we ended up with some very clear problem areas that allowed us to turn around and come back and say, okay, these are the areas that seem to be the problem. Now let's talk about how we can effectively fix them. And what everyone did was when they got their chance to air their grievances, they felt heard. And then the next step was buy-in, getting all of your primary decision makers to share what was wrong, then turns around in your benefit and allows them to feel buy-in in the process. They now think their needs are going to get met because they are. Ultimately, what you want to do is meet those needs through your digital strategy. You hear what's not working for everyone. You say, here's ways that we can meet them. Now, let's prioritize those. And then once you do that, you have your vision. Now you have your strategic vision. Now our organization says, here's what our website didn't do. Here's what wasn't working for you. Here's where we want it to go. Now we have a vision. We're all now working together. Everyone now has that collective head nod. We're all looking the same way. We all have the same focus. And then it's just working through a series of tactics to get to the end result. Yeah. And that's really what Dottie's company brought to Trout Unlimited was this very clear process that we would go through. Everyone was going to agree. Everyone's heads were nodding the same way. And then we move on from the strategic vision to tactical efforts.
So Trout Unlimited was a Hodges Consulting client, and you must have been such an evangelist, I guess, right? You had immediate buy-in for what Dottie was doing that she hired you away.
I had been the director of online operations for 8 years, so my time had come. I had run my course at Trout Unlimited. It was a great organization. Okay. It's a great organization. They're doing good work.
And we still have them as a client, so it's all very good.
Okay, excellent. All right. Now, I had mentioned an office that I'm having a hard time seeing how the website impacts them. So help me out. I had mentioned bringing to this table finance and the CFO and the business. What does the Tulani? How does the website even relate to them?
I think it's a little bit of how it relates to them in the overall of how the website relates to them and also how the process relates to them. So a lot of, especially what Amanda was talking about, is also the process of how do we get everyone on the same page. So what we do as 3Spot is that we do stakeholder interviews and see, you know, what people are looking for, what they're not getting, what they want, that kind of thing. And the way something like finance plays in is that if you're hiring from outside or even if you're doing it internally, there's a lot of money and time and energy that goes into a digital strategy, a website, hiring people, that kind of stuff.
So having their perspective is valuable.
Having their perspective and having, you know, is it worth it, is it not worth it, that kind of thing. Also, in the thought of what if one of your goals is raising money or doing something like that and working with, you know, the finance team to say, okay, how much money is going to be worth it? You know, how much is it going to matter if we do this and we raise, you know, $5,000? Like, is that still impactful? Like, what, you know, what really matters? So, I mean, everyone really has a role, and it's important to kind of, as Amanda said, not ignore that, because you don't want to come back, as we were talking about before, you're coming to the leadership and you're coming to the people on a board or something like that, and they're like, well, this is not what we expected, or this is not what we wanted, or this is not answering any of our questions, or, you know, it's a great website, but why do we
have this,
yeah,
you know.
There should be no better evangelizer for your mission than your staff. And if every staff doesn't feel bought into your end product, then you've not done your homework. And so making sure that the director of human resources, which needs to post job openings on the website, has a clear and free way to do so is critical for that end product. And only, you know, let's just say your primary goal is to drive membership or to build community. That doesn't mean that you're going to do that to the detriment of process or efficiency for other staff in the organization. Mm. That program director who's still trying to do a very small focused niche of your mission needs as much buy-in and as much voice in the process as the executive director. Everyone needs a voice at the table.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
And that just you mentioned the power of the process really is part of it as well, not just the outcome. Amanda, you were talking about that earlier, where, you know, people collectively begin to see, you know, if I'm a director of development, obviously I have pretty clear priorities for the site, right? But if I'm suddenly at a table where maybe I haven't really been conversant or, you know, had the opportunity to work alongside directly finance, HR, whatever, where collectively we start to have the conversation about the good of the whole, it really changes the perspective. Everyone's still got what they need to get done, right, at the end of the day, but it really helps that perspective so that everyone's kind of starting to look in the same direction.
One of the examples I had at Trout Unlimited was to really sit and listen to membership services. The people are on the front lines answering the phone calls from people who are giving online or who are doing any number of tasks through the website, and really hearing from their perspective what their feedback is specifically from the members, where the sticky points are, what they have to put up with when the fundraising team puts out, you know, 100,000 emails or the advocacy team puts out an action alert on an issue, what the reciprocal event is for that person. And I think it's very common for nonprofits, for programs and teams to work very siloed. You have your task, you have what you do, you sit down and do it. There's not a lot of opportunity for the whole organization to come together around a single project, except for digital media. These tend to be the kinds of projects where the entire group, the entire nonprofit as a whole, has a stake in the outcome. And that really is where electronic transcends a lot of what any nonprofit does.
Dottie, I'd like to talk a little about the details of this strategic day. Are there board members there? Is the board represented in that, or no? Really, just the senior leadership?
No, that's a good question, and can be. Historically, we have not seen that, not by design. Typically, you get, you know, an engaged executive director, CEO, whatever the role may be. You get, you know, the C-level and director-level heads of departments in that sort of workshop environment. Oftentimes, at key points with clients. For example, Amanda mentioned the strategic vision deliverable. It can go by other names. I think 3Spot uses a different name, but basically that's that touchstone document that says, here's what we're going to accomplish together. That's the kind of document that often gets elevated to the board level. So oftentimes when we create a project timeline, one of the first questions with the core committee is, okay, who are decision makers? Who needs to be involved at certain touch points? What are those timelines? We have a quarterly board meeting coming up, whatever it may be, so that we can structure the project around that and get that buy-in.
You like to do these off-site?
Typically, it's on-site at the client, sometimes virtual. We're a fairly virtual company, actually, so it tends to be a real blend, and it really, we look to the client to dictate what their preferred, you know, method is.
Okay, and you are the facilitator for the day?
Yes, our team.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see, we have, I guess, another couple minutes or so. Let's see, who wants to leave some parting thoughts? Let's see. Tulani, well, let me ask you. Sorry. Tulani, it sounds like 3Spot does more than just build websites. I mean, it sounds like you're deeply engaged too in the analytics that are going to contribute to the design of the website.
Yes, 3Spot, we started off mostly doing websites, but we also do social media consulting, strategy. Sometimes it requires in-house work. I've gone to work for clients for a while. We do analytics. We do content creation and content strategy, user experience. And so it really kind of just ranges everything, which is, again, goes back to, you know, you're not just building a website, you're creating an experience and you're creating a strategy. And so, you know, if we just built a website and we didn't and have conversations about how social plays into it, how we're going to launch it on social media once it goes up, you know, what the, you know, the analytics that we're going to put behind it, you know, how are those going to play in? Are we going to have Google Analytics? Are we tracking out all the links, you know, that kind of stuff? Then you're kind of just doing part of your digital strategy. And so 3Spot is an interactive agency. It's not just a web design agency. And we really, you know, make sure to touch on all of those things. And so it could be, you know, going through every ounce of content and saying, okay, how do we have to change this? How do we migrate this over? That kind of stuff. And it also could be coming up with a robust way to show analytics to the board.
Okay.
You know, so it really, there's a lot of different things that we do.
All right. And Dottie, why don't you leave us with some parting thoughts about the importance of the S-bomb?
Sure. So the importance of the S-bomb, I think, in the context we've been talking a lot about in the context of web development, which is certainly applicable, we think of it a little more broadly. And just to echo what Tulani's saying about looking at the big picture, that, you know, the S-bomb isn't a four-letter word. It's not a dirty word. It's not something where, you hear someone say, we need a strategy, and people go, oh, you know, and they just think of many, many months and many, many stacks of papers that may or may never get examined digitally or otherwise. And we want to create something for the organization that's very viable. You know, it creates and produces a roadmap. It, you know, creates buy-in, ultimately gets to a better product that's going to have a better ROI for the organization. And the truth is, we kind of cheat because we like the framework so much, we use it for lots of stuff, whether it's a website project or an organization says, we need to look across the enterprise at what we're doing with our digital program, or we kind of just need an e-communications plan of attack, we'll apply the same framework. So we think it works across the board, which to me means it must be at least relatively solid.
And it also just helps to always say that it's a working document. So understanding the digital space is changing all the time, you know, making sure that, you know, you create these documents and this strategy, but, you know, really emphasizing to people, this is a working document. You know, another platform might come up or another way to approach fundraising might happen, and really, you know, having people be open to, yes, it's our strategy, but it could develop, it can change.
And being willing to evaluate whether that new platform belongs in our suite or,
exactly,
or not.
Exactly.
And avoiding that shiny object syndrome.
Yep.
All right. We have to leave it there. Thank you very much, ladies.
Thank you for having us.
My pleasure. Tulani Elisa is social media manager at 3Spot. Dottie Hodges, president of Hodges Consulting. And the newest employee at Hodges Consulting, is that correct? Is Amanda Heidke. She is director of digital strategy there. Thank you again very much.
Thank you.
Thanks. This is Tony Martinetti, nonprofit radio coverage of NTC 2014, the Nonprofit Technology Conference. Thank you very much for being with us.
And my thanks to everyone at N10, the Nonprofit Technology Network. Got some live listener love. Stafford, Virginia, New Bern, North Carolina, and New York, New York. Live listener love to you. And New York, thank you for being with us. There's more. If I didn't shout you out yet, I shall. Generosity Series. They host multi-charity 5K runs and walks. And part of what they provide is the charity support team for their charity partners, the charities that are running the events with them. You talk to the charity support team and they help you with the fundraising part of your 5K event. They help you get more runners and they help you empower the runners and train the runners so that the runners are getting more donors. And naturally, there is an online component to this. You have a dashboard and online management, but there's also the charity support team that you can talk to, and I like that. You could talk to the COO, Dave Lynn. He is at 718-506-9777 and on the web, generosityseries.com. Can we get off ALS's back? They have had an enormous, fortunate spike in dollars and donors from the Ice Bucket Challenge. So they have got incredible issues, enviable, incredible issues. I would like us to give them the benefit of our doubt about what's going to happen, and stop questioning whether they're capable of managing this, and let's see how they manage it. If they were Toyota or Macy's, I think we wouldn't be questioning whether they can manage this. We'd just be congratulating and we'd be in awe. This came to ALS totally organically through a patient. So they, because it was not originally an ALS strategy or scheme, the Ice Bucket Challenge. So they did not have a plan. Let's see how they manage it. Let's give them the benefit of our doubt. I've got a video on this at TonyMartinetti.com. And that is Tony's Take Two for Friday, 12th of September, 36th show of the year. My goodness, 36. Holy cow. Yiğit Uçtum. He's a senior manager at Wegner CPAs. He has his MBA, Master of Accountancy, and is a certified public accountant. He's also a certified fraud examiner. He works exclusively with tax-exempt organizations and oversees the firm's Form 990 nationwide preparation practice. Yiğit manages Wegner's New York City office. They're at WegnerCPAs.com. He's here in the studio to talk about the IRS and how it helps your marketing. Yiğit, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
My pleasure. It's cool. Glad you're in the studio. The Form 990, this is, I thought this was strictly a burden and something to be not avoided. We can't avoid it, but just something to be done and kind of put in the closet. You don't think so?
Well, you're right. A lot of organization leaders think that it's a burden. And actually, it's a great opportunity for organizations to show the world that all the good things that they have done in the year, and then it's also a good opportunity for them to tell the world how well they are run. And in the past, this was seen just as a form filed with the IRS,
right,
and only to be shown to potential donors or anybody coming to your office and basically asking for it. And now it's widely available on the web, especially the most common is the GuideStar. And because right, it's out there, it gives an opportunity for organizations to use the marketing tool.
Okay. And not only GuideStar, but state attorneys general, a lot of them have them.
Yeah.
A lot of organizations put the 990 on their site themselves.
Yes.
As part of transparency.
Yes.
Right?
For example, in New York, every not for profit registered with New York that files annual report with the state of New York, their 990 along with their financial statements are on their website. So
your advice is to think of this as a marketing tool.
It's an opportunity, yes. So if you see it as just a burden, and as most organizations currently do, mm-hmm, and don't give it enough attention, it can potentially hurt you. So thing about is, For some organizations, it's true that the 990 is seen more than their annual report. But they spend all the time and energy on their annual report,
yes,
to make it perfect. But they only spend maybe a fraction of the time to get the 990 ready for filing.
And we're going to have some time to talk about this. But you even suggest that people beyond accountants contribute to the 990.
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
We're going to have a chance to talk about that. That's mm-hmm. I love that advice. Okay, let's just make sure that everybody understands what we mean 990. There are three 990s, and you're the expert, so why don't
right.
you acquaint us
right.
with,
yeah.
with the three?
Yeah, the depending on the size of the organization, the organizations can file three different 990 forms. If they are under $50,000 in revenue, what they can do is they can file a form called 990N, which is also known as the postcard return, and it's just basic information and a statement saying that the revenues were less than $50,000.
Okay.
And with some states like New York, if you are over 25, then you have to file a 990Z, which is the next step. So organizations that are in revenues under 200,000 and in assets under 500,000, they can file this form 990EZ, which is a shorter form. And the larger organization above that threshold can file, they have to file the form 990, which is longer
so
form.
Just like we have individual 1040s and 1040EZs,
exactly,
there's a 990 and 990EZ,
exactly,
and then also the 990N,
right,
for the really small, for the under $50,000 in revenue,
right.
But
right.
now you raised an interesting point. Sometimes it's state regulations that govern which 990 you have to submit. Is that right? Because you mentioned New York having
yes.
a certain threshold for the EZ.
Right.
So you have to look to your state and also to the IRS.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
But we're not talking about the 990 filing requirements here. Just I digressed a little bit. We have talked about the 990 in the past, especially
with Gene Takagi. So you could find those shows in the past. But we want to focus on the 990 as a marketing tool. And part of your advice is that even if you're able to file the shorter form, you might want to do one that's the next level up.
Exactly. It depends on the purpose of how you are going to use it. For example, if you are a smaller organization under $50,000, you may want to file the 990EZ to get your 990 on GuideStar. So, or a lot of foundations, for example, they would like you to submit a 990EZ or a 990 with their grant applications. And that's another reason why you may want to file the longer form in this case. And if you are going after donors, and even if you are a small organization, if you can show that you are doing all these good governance practices and all these other things as just like well run as a large organization, I think it also helps with getting funds. But if you do not have a purpose, I think it always costs more time and money to file the longer form. So I think it has to be evaluated in for individual circumstances.
All right,
so.
Fair enough, but something to consider.
Yeah.
And I just love the different perspective. This is why I wanted to have you on the show. The different perspective of the 990. That it's, you know, as we said, it's not just no longer just buried anymore, but to look at it as a marketing tool, and therefore it has to be consistent with all your other, what is the traditional marketing tools, right?
Exactly. Yeah, for example, you don't want to confuse the world with sending mixed messages. If your annual report is saying one thing, and if your 90 is saying another thing, then it confuses people. So that's one of the reasons why certain parts of the 990 should not be done, prepared by the accountants. It should be prepared by people who is also preparing other marketing materials.
Excellent. So. Okay, so let's get into some of the different places in the Form 990 where you see marketing opportunities. You like the program service accomplishments.
Yeah.
Where is that? Where will people find that on the 990?
That would be on the second page of the form.
I love that you're a 990 expert. Yeah. this guy, like, he does not have the 990 here in front of him, which is what? It's like 17 pages or something.
I believe it's 12.
Oh, and then schedules.
And then the schedules.
Oh, but then there's many more schedules.
Yeah,
he does not have a 990 here in the studio with him. So when I ask him, like, what section is it? And he knows the page. So you have the expert here. I love that. All right, so you know, your practice is 990s. I love it.
Yeah.
All right, so the program service accomplishments.
Yeah, program service accomplishments.
Page two, part three. It's beautiful.
Organizations get the chance here. This is like the free marketing opportunity to tell the world all the great things that you have accomplished in the past year. And a lot of times, despite the IRS instructions, this is one place IRS helps you market, as you mentioned, is in the instructions. IRS wants you to be specific. They want you to use non-financial data. But a lot of organizations just they see it as a burden, so year after year they repeat the same thing.
And the 990 preparation is buried in their finance department,
exactly.
Or the outside consultant who's doing it.
Right.
And they just want to know it when it's done.
Exactly.
Or you can't fill. You need a number for page 4, line 93. I don't know if line 93, but you know, you're probably rolling your eyes. Oh my God, what an amateur! Question 93 is not on page 4, for Christ's sake. But the thing is just buried until it's ready for signature, basically, right? It's not.
Right.
So we can have program officers doing the program service accomplishment section or something like that.
Right. So basically, it's one thing to say, let's take like a food pantry. It's one thing to say that you have served meals to low-income people in the community. And it's another thing to give some more specific. You can say we have served different 50,000 different people, 80,000 meals during the year. So it gives more impact.
And people are seeing this on GuideStar and on your website. And, of course, it needs to be consistent with your other marketing materials.
Exactly.
It's cool.
Exactly.
What other opportunities do you see in that section?
I'll give you another example of that because, if you're a membership organization, try to use it to recruit members. And if you have a conference, it's one thing to say you spent $100,000 in this conference. It's another thing to say our conference was attended by 1,200 people. We had 60 different sessions. You can name some of the sessions, including XYZ. And we also had two networking opportunities. Again, this is anything you can tell to have people join you as a member for a membership organization. And again, anything that you see that would attract donors or whoever you are trying to convince, I guess.
All right, cool. Very good. Governance. There's the governance section. Is this a section on the 990 related to governance?
Yeah, there is a section on 99 on the 990 that has a lot of questions about
the
governance.
What's the section number?
Part 6 of
beautiful,
the 990.
Beautiful. I love that.
Basically, in that part, it's asking a lot of questions. Some of these questions, such as whistleblower policy and document destruction policy, these can be mandated by other Sarbanes-Oxley, for example,
other statutes. Federal or state laws.
Right, and New York will start mandating certain policies there as well. And some of these policies are very easy to adapt. So there are templates out there. It's not a huge burden. And I encourage every organization, if they do not have a policy out there, just go look for a sample, adapt it, and check the box yes to show that they are well run and well governed. And this would reduce the potential audit risk. And it's also important to use that section to basically solicit new board members, because one of the users of this may be prospective board members looking at your 990 to see if this is an organization. Do I want to join this organization? Do they know what they are doing? Am I be exposed to any risk by joining them? So,
all right, we got to go out for a break. I got to do some more live listener love. There's so much. I got to squeeze some in. Tuscaloosa, Alabama, welcome. Live listener love to you. I don't think you've been with us before. Tuscaloosa, welcome. And Jersey City, New Jersey. It's the birthplace of my dad. He was born in Greenville Hospital, Jersey City, New Jersey. And Langley, British Columbia, you're back with us. Live listener love to all of you. We got some more. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, @MontyTaylor.com.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Talking Alternative Radio. 24 hours a day.
If you have big dreams and a small budget, tune in to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. I do. I'm Adam Braun, founder of Pencils of Promise.
Welcome back to Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95%. Let's go abroad with live listener love, Belgium. Belgium, we can't see your city. I thought that was a pretty open society there, Belgium, but you're blocked. But welcome, live listener love to you. Let's go to China, where I send Ni Hao to Shanghai, Chengdu. Korea, multiple listeners in Korea, as always, including Seoul, Annyeonghaseyo. And Japan, multiple listeners, Tokyo, Akashi, and others, Konnichiwa. And of course, podcast pleasantries to those of you listening in the time shift, wherever you may be, 9,500 of you, podcast pleasantries to you. Yeet. Let's keep talking about the governance section. This is not a free-form narrative section like the program service accomplishments?
It certain parts of it are free-form. For example, one of the questions there is like, what's your policies to review the 990? So in there, you can explain like what the process of reviewing the 990, like does every board member sees the 990, who looks at it, who prepares it, who reviews it, and how it gets filed. The other freeform part is the conflict of interest policy. You can have different types and who's monitoring it, okay. who's looking at it. And another part is the determination of the executive compensation. So what's the policy around that? Looking at comparables, like do you have an independent committee looking at it and documenting this decision. There are some freeform parts.
All within governance, of course.
Right.
And we have talked about, I think, all those subjects that you just mentioned with Gene Takagi when we've spent time on appropriate governance and oversight. So this is a perfect dovetail. How about you have something about the statement of functional expenses.
Mm-hmm.
Where will we find that if we want to go into the 990?
That would be part 9 of the 990 basically. And the statement of functional expenses. I believe you covered the overhead myth in your previous shows.
We probably. Have, yeah, we had the three signers, the overhead myth. That was on September 16th, the CEOs of Charity Navigator, GuideStar, and Better Business Bureau Wise Giving Alliance. Yes.
So basically, I want to refer to that, which is a great point they made. And a lot of not-for-profits are too worried about their program service percentage.
Mm.
And that that they want to put, like, as a reflex, I guess, everything they can in the program. And they should do that, too, if it's correct. So, but sometimes like it gets to a point where they want to look at things which is more like gray, and you know, they have the natural incentive to put more into program and not in management, general, and fundraising.
Yeah,
and that doesn't necessarily reflect the truth. And that area, a sophisticated donor, a foundation reviewing an I-90 can tell that certain things are not correct there. Because certain things, such as an audit, it has to be 100% management and general accounting and audit is that. So I think it's another point important here is that that schedule is done correctly so that a potential donor or a funder looking at it shouldn't question anything, basically.
Accurate. So, yeah. And that
accuracy
was
is the key.
That was the whole message of the overhead myth letter, is don't feel you have to devote everything to program at the expense of overhead, which can be very, very important.
It is very important.
So you have sophisticated people looking at your 990 and you're thinking of it as marketing. Keep that in mind. We have just a couple minutes left. There's a part of the 990 that you call a playground.
Yes.
Where is that?
That would be Schedule O. That's a place where you can put anything that an organization can put anything they want in there. So I would use it as a
place. What is it called? What is Schedule O called?
I think it's just called a Schedule O.
Really?
It's like
okay.
a supplementary information.
So it
basically.
Is why, okay, playground.
I think it's supplementary information.
Okay.
And basically... I would encourage organizations to explain anything that might look unusual on the 990.
Oh, okay.
For example, let's say if they are starting a capital campaign. And in that initial year, they wouldn't necessarily have the revenue yet, but they have all these fundraising expenses. So if their fundraising expense ratio is unusually high, and this might be a place to explain that they are going through this capital campaign, and that way they are also informing the public that they are doing this. So it's another place to use that for that. So
outstanding. Really interesting perspective on Form 990. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Yiğit Uçtum, Senior Manager at Wegner CPAs, manager of their New York City office. They're at WegnerCPAs.com. Next week, buyer beware, your purchasing policies, and how to do better. Also, Maria Semple returns on managing a spike, whatever that means for you in numbers, in potential donors. If you missed any part of today's show, find it on TonyMartinetti.com. Thanks again to our listener of the week, John Fulwider. Remember Generosity Series and their charity support team, multi-charity 5K runs and walks, GenerositySeries.com. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Leibowitz is our line producer. The show's social media is by Julia Campbell of J. Campbell Social Marketing. And the remote producer of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio is John Federico of The New Rules. This music, it's by Scott Stein of Brooklyn. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Come, join us for the 13th Annual Vigil for International Peace and Ecology on Sunday, September 21, from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. A celebration of live music and dance performances, spoken word, a human peace sign, art installations, and a world peace flag ceremony that celebrates the United Nations International Day of Peace. That's Sunday, September 21, from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Central Park, Nuremberg Bandshell, by the Bethesda Fountain. For more information or volunteer, go to www.vigil4internationalpeace.org. That's the number 4 in the URL, or call 212-222-5432. That's 212-222-5432. We'll see you there. Don't you know it's here?
That now is the key. You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Talking Alternative.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at MontyTaylor.com.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
TalkingAlternative.com.